where to go higher. And what's the way to go higher? By hearing God's word. So now, the Kirtan is naturally leading us to Srila Prabhupada. And we are very fortunate to have some very exalted Prabhupada disciples here today. His Holiness Sri Goswami Maharaj. His Grace Shesha Prabhu. And His Grace Shravananda Prabhu. So tonight we'll hear Prabhu Srila Prabhupada's Katha from these very exalted Prabhupada disciples. So first of all, we request His Holiness Kulikam Swami Maharaj to become Srila Prabhupada.
So thank you very much. Pati Sri Maharaj Ki. I do like to speak about Prabhupada somehow. He has such a big influence on my life, and I feel so fortunate to have met him. So I like to talk about him. Makes me feel happy to grow up by him. But just on this point, we were talking about kirtan, and I remember in Vrindavan, 1974, Srila Prabhupada was a little ill at the time. And the temple wasn't finished. We were, but everybody in the temple had to come in the evening program as well as the morning program. Because the evening program, Srila Prabhupada himself came. And it was a tamal tree, and he would sit under the tree. And all the devotees, maybe 40 or 50 devotees, would come for the evening aarti at 6:30. And then at 7 or 5 after 7, one of the senior sannyasis would have to speak. And Prabhupada wasn't speaking, he was just sitting under the tree and he would listen. And Shruti Kirti was his personal servant. And the general instruction was Prabhupada didn't want him to speak too much, keep him a little short. And then we'd have a second kirtan. So, I heard just recently, a couple of years ago, that when I spoke, I didn't speak very long, and Prabhupada turned to Shruti Kirti and he said, at least it was short. So you could see I wasn't such a great speaker. But it was a little scary giving class in front of Prabhupada. But anyway, then the second kirtan, and we'd have a long kirtan, and everybody would, you know, get into it. And then I remember one evening, we're coming back, and it was still summer, you know, or September. The Prabhupada was sitting on his wooden bed, you know, the beds were there. The building wasn't complete, but it was so hot that he was sleeping outside. So Shruti Kirti and I were there. Prabhupada was on the bed, we were sitting on the ground. Kind of like before the mosquitoes came, before he put up the mosquito net, he had talked for a few minutes. And Prabhupada was feeling inspired by the kirtan. And he said to us, just kind of like, just burst out of him. He said, this kirtan gives us life. He said, this is a special mercy of Lord Chaitanya. And then he said, and if we don't get life from the kirtan, simply sex life. So that was the special mercy of Lord Chaitanya, right? He gives us something even better than sex life. This kirtan rasa is so nice that we can feel ourselves transcendental. At least for a few minutes, you know, the great girls are over there, the boys are over there, you just dance and get into it. And otherwise, it's true, the binding principle of this attraction, the other female, is the main attraction. But Lord Chaitanya has given us the kirtan, we can easily transcend it. Of course, we have to get into the kirtan, don't be shy. And at least I'm not shy. And so that saved me. I think all these years, otherwise I'm a Malaysia, you know, Westerner here, Budapest and New York. So I don't think I could have gotten this far. Not that I'm very far, but at least by associating Bhakti Shri Maharaj and other exalted devotees, I've been able to remain sannyas. So, but mostly, it's been a struggle. I can't say it's been a struggle. It hasn't been a struggle. It has. But certainly, without kirtan, I couldn't have done it. Just, you know, not that I've gone it all the way, but still, you can all pray for me that I continue to sannyas ashram for the next few years before I leave my body. But the kirtan is certainly, that instruction was very pertinent for me. You know, I do try to throw myself into kirtan whenever the opportunity is there. So I do have many more stories, but maybe we should just go around.
We don't want you to get that shot.
I see, someone else is thinking that I'll speak.
I'll do whatever you want.
Okay.
Yeah. It's so nice to see Charita Maharaj after so many years. Actually, my best memories of him were in India when we were in New Delhi, and I think it was 74. We went out in the streets and. The preaching in India wasn't the same as it was in America. We had a life membership program where we would meet different persons of their business and get them involved with Krishna consciousness. So to go out in the streets and chant and to distribute books was actually very different. Hardly anyone was doing it. I don't think anyone was doing it. Everybody was preaching for life members. So Marge and I went out and had kirtan distributed books. Right in the streets, main downtown of New Delhi,
Kanath Circus.
It was very interesting because people kind of gave us that look. Not what were we doing, but who we were. I think they were used to things like that in India, but seeing us doing it was, and that was part of proper strategy, us being in India, which we were more than willing to do. But to, give some personal experiences with Sri Prabhupada. I was talking about it earlier with Bhakti Sri Maharaj. We tried to keep our distance sometimes because we wanted to maintain a lot of reverence and understand from that distance Prabhupada's very divine position. Because familiarity, as we know, can breed some type of other feelings. So I tried to keep my distance, but before I came to Krishna consciousness, again to back up to telling the experience of Srila Prabhupada, I had met numerous gurus from India, Sri Chinmoy, Sri Chinmoyananda, Satchidananda, who I was initiated by, and I'd become a vegetarian. But even though it was small links to something greater, it was my introduction into India and Indian culture. But after some time of living in the ashram in New York, the Integral Yoga Institute, and I was a yoga teacher, not the yoga teacher there, we were disillusioned. So one woman who was actually quite connected to a big author, she was with that yoga institute, and she asked to take care of her project in she had a little plantation in Jamaica, in the mountains. Can't hear?
It's increased the volume, it's coming. The higher the lower doesn't matter.
And this is getting to some very interesting experiences because that is how Srila Prabhupada was beginning to spread the seed of Krishna consciousness throughout the world. So we were living in the mountains and the trees in Jamaica, every tree has some fruits growing on it, so we could sit there and meditate and not have to worry really about anything. Rains every day, very mode of goodness. At one point, we had little
huts that we had made because the plantation house was actually haunted. Believe it or not, it really was. So we lived outside in small little huts. My friend, who would later join the movement also, his name was Peter Hawkins. And he was from England. He was an artist teacher. He eventually did many bronzes.
What was his initiative?
He never really got initiated. Yeah. Remember him?
He did that bronze, that stuff like that.
Yeah, we were in, right? So we were out there, he had his little hut on the river, and I had my little hut on the mountain, and we would meditate all day long, Kundalini yoga, Hatha yoga, trying for that, just peace. We're not even talking about ecstasy, you know, just some peace in the mind. And we ran out of incense. So we went down into town, into Kingston, Jamaica, and we went looking around in little stores. And we found in a little store in Jamaica, in the middle of nowhere, in the early 70s, packs of spiritual sky incense. The original packs of incense had, if I remember correctly, Mahavishnu and Garbhodakshaya Vishnu on it, and some little instructions and a phone number. We didn't have websites in those days, and addresses. And in itself, it was a very spiritual experience when we got that incense. It wasn't just incense, it was a preaching story. Right? And the fellow with long dreadlocks, Jamaican fellow, said, "Hey, Mom, we have something else also." And there were the posters of the ISKCON paintings of Lord in the Hearts and Krishna and Vrindavan. So we said, "Yeah, we'll take a few of those too." And we went back to our huts, and I put up a poster of Lord Vishnu, the one on the second canto, the very pink and the lotus picture of Paramatma, and put it up. And when I unrolled it, a little piece of paper fell out that in English said, "If you offer me your love, water, flower, leaf, I will accept it. Patram, Bushpam, Palam, Soyam." And I looked at that. I said, "Well, we sure have plenty of flowers and fruits here." So I piled up avocados and roses in front of this poster and would offer the incense. And I began realizing that the hours it took me to meditate and perform pranayama, within minutes, I was feeling that same peace. So I could see the process was so perfect that I became very attached to it. And I actually became very bored being in the mountains, which was like Satya Yuga. It was so perfect because I had given, we ran out of incense again. And I had given the woman, one Jamaican woman, the poster because she said this one ghost kept coming into her little hut and disturbing her. So I gave her that poster. I said, "Light this incense, take this poster, and the ghost won't come." And she said it worked. So I got very bored, like I said, because you can only take so much of perfect material nature. That's not what we're aiming for. And I went back to America. As soon as I got back to America, I immediately felt that I needed that poster again. I was very attached to it. So there began the meeting in Hartford, Connecticut, of a devotee who opened up the Bhagavad Gita and showed the paintings, and I eventually met him in New Vrindavan and Sringa Chaitanya. And he just sat there opening the paintings and showing me the paintings, and I kept saying, "But I'm looking for a small Gita." And he kept showing me the paintings and showing me the paintings. So I went, "But look at these paintings. Someone must have told him if you want to sell books, just show the paintings." And I, again, stubborn as I am, I said, "No, but I just want a small Gita because I travel a lot." So he left. And then again, I said, "No, I think I do want that Gita." And I began chasing him, and I couldn't find him. So I went to a bookstore and wanted to know where I could get the Gita and the poster and the incense. They said, "Well, I think you can get it in New York somewhere." And like that, step by step, Prabhupada's devotees and the incense. So going through this whole yogic process, I eventually ended up at the Brooklyn Temple, got the Bhagavad Gita. I never got the poster until probably about 10 years ago. Couldn't find that poster, but found the Prabhupada's temple. And it was Govardhan Puja in 1972, and those were the days of peace. Because I think if you ask most of the older devotees, They, you ask them the reason they join, many of them will say the prasadam. Mounds and hills of prasadam. So after that, it changed my heart, and I basically, I was doing some philanthropic work at a mental institution helping people out, and one older devotee, Nayana Brahm, he said to me, because he was, again, you know, the whole purpose was to get somebody to join. And he said, you know, why do you want to do that work? Everybody in the material world is insane. Because everybody's misidentifying with who they are. So you'll find a person with schizophrenia or some other psychosis, they're thinking they're someone else. They're identifying with some other personality than who they really are. I looked at him and I said, you're right. And then I joined. But being through those yoga groups, we were looking at auras, the color of somebody's aura, to see what kind of spiritual level they're on. So when I was at first at the temple, and Prabhupada had come, I said, let me see what color his aura is. Still in the mind of this weird impersonalist yogi, you know, mentality. And Prabhupada came out of this little room in Brooklyn in the back. Actually, there's one painting of Prabhupada holding the danda with the purple velvet that Pushkar did. And that was done in that from the back room there in Brooklyn, Prabhupada posed for that. And Prabhupada came out. Everybody just paid obeisances and told dandavas. And I said, let me see what color his aura is. Well, I looked up. And Prabhupada just happened to be right in front of me when I began to look up. Everybody was full prostrated, and I looked up, and Prabhupada looked down at me and smiled, and there was no color to describe the amount of illumination coming from Prabhupada. So I lay back down, and I said, finally I found a real guru, a perfect guru. So that was one of my first experiences with Prabhupada. After that, in New York, we were trying to collect and build a temple there. We had that large temple in downtown Manhattan that eventually was sold. But my dream was to go to India, because I also knew if I went to India, I heard Prabhupada was there a lot, and you could have a lot of association here and more often. So when I went off to India, that was really early stages when I met Sri Vikram Maharaj, and Prabhupada was there in Delhi and Vrindavan. And at one point I was trying to leave Delhi after 1 year to someone that asked me to be the temple president in Madras. But before I was going to go, I was going to go to Vrindavan. Just because we always did that. Vrindavan was so close and we always wanted to be in Vrindavan. It was very early stages. It was just huts. There was no temple there. Just sand, a few steel rods poking up from the sand, and some huts. So I was sneaking out the back of the temple to go, and Prabhupada was there circumambulating Tulsi and chanting his rounds. And he had his little, we used to call him Swami Cast.
Where was it?
In Delhi.
Which place?
Anandi Ketan. There was a back entrance too, a little spiral, like a little spiral staircase coming out the back. There was a Tulsi there, and Prabhupada, it was cold, and Prabhupada had his chatter, and his little, have you ever seen that hat? With the string that comes down. He was a circumambulating Tulsi, and he was chanting. And I paid my obeisances. Prabhupada said, where are you going? I said, I'm going to Vrindavan to Srila Prabhupada. And he said, oh, come with me. I'm going also. And again, trying to keep some distance, not sitting in the same car with His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. I said, no, Srila Prabhupada, I'll go on the train. He said, no, no, you come with me. And I'm trying to back out of this, which would have been just a wonderful opportunity. And for the third time, the Prabhupada was, you know, someone like me, just to be in the same car with him in those days, I just didn't feel qualified. And at least three times, Prabhupada was almost demanding to come with him. And at one point, Prabhupada could see that whatever the reason was, I wasn't relenting. So he said, all right, when you get to Vrindavan, arrange for my sleeping on the roof. Those days, no AC, usually try to catch a little breeze on the roof, Prabhupada could sleep on the roof
of
Delhi.
Always like to sleep on the roof of Delhi in summer.
Yeah. And the little bed too is, was it the Chattan?
Dari bed.
So we all began sleeping on the roof too because it was nice. It was very hot, there were a lot of mosquitoes. But he said, just arrange with Guru Das for me to sleep on the roof. And I said, okay, sure, Prabhupada. I got on the train, kicked myself a few times. And got to Vrindavan before Srila Prabhupada arrived, and he came in his ambassador and with a couple devotees, few devotees. And when he got out, I remembered the little suitcase, just a small little suitcase with a rope tied around it. And things like that, I mean, I was very analytical, and I was a philosophy major also before I left college, and I just thought, you know, what is a true sign of renunciation? Because there were many individuals, even within our own organization, that had very fancy briefcases and other types of luggage, and there was Srila Prabhupada with his little suitcase with a rope around it, and that was fine, because that wasn't the point. The point was his mission. So another thing to verify to me, you know, renunciation of a true saint. Because again, the other gurus I had seen, they were in very fancy environments. And actually, the last guru I had before Prabhupada, I snuck into his room, Swami Satchidananda, because I wanted to see, you know, how a saint would live. It says in the Gita to examine guru before choosing him, and to see what his level of renunciation is and what his level of sincerity is and practices what he preaches. And I went in and it looked like a room like any other mundane person's home. You know, he had little airplanes hanging. This was the other guru, hanging from the ceiling. To, you know, in those days, to fly on an airplane was pretty impressive back in the 60s. So it kept, in the very beginning, there were those symptoms to analyze and to look, and there wasn't one thing you could find wrong with Srila Prabhupada. He was the perfect example of renunciation and purity and perfection, and his mission, which is to simply spread Krishna consciousness. And especially if anybody's visited Radha Damodar's room where Prabhupada stayed, you know, this is the true saint. So those are just a few little experiences, and definitely won't be able to say, at least it was short. The other one thing I wanted to share, because Maharaj touched upon it earlier today about Vrishikanda's movement, the spreading of the holy name in hundreds of years, where the spreading of Krishna consciousness through Vrishikanda's Sankirtan movement basically didn't occur. And until it was revived again by our Sampradaya, the great Acharyas in our Sampradaya, and who was appointed to do this, to spread it throughout the world. So when we were in Madras, I was the president there, and we had a 10-day program in Srila Prabhupada. That was very ecstatic. Thousands and tens of thousands of people would come. We put quarter page ads in the newspaper for people to come. It was a big marriage hall in the center of Madras. And one night, Prabhupada was giving a lecture. One man stood up, was Prabhupada a lot of questions, and he said, Swamiji, have you ever seen Krishna? And Prabhupada said, what does it matter if I have seen Krishna? What matters is if you will see Krishna. And everybody applauded Prabhupada. Prabhupada is there to help us. In India, people want to see miracles and yogic powers. You know, and basically Prabhupada wanted to change everybody's heart throughout the world. So after that program, which was, again, truly ecstatic, having that association with Prabhupada, we took a little train to Nehru in Andhra Pradesh, where one of our swamis was building a temple. If anybody's familiar with Andhra Pradesh. It's a little sandy area. Mahamsa had gotten some land. Woman let us stay there to begin the construction. We would go on morning walks to Srila Prabhupada, and one man who helped us a lot in Madras, because he could translate almost every language. He was Gujarati, but he could translate into every language in India. So many religious groups, when their gurus would come from other parts of India, would call them and he would translate in local language. He came with us on that morning walk, and he had told me earlier something that he had heard in another Gaudiya Mutha in Madras. They were very disturbed at some things they might have read that happened in another country with ISKCON or the preaching of Krishna consciousness. So I said, seeing them, you know, bringing this up to Sri Prabhupada, because the Swami, who was the head there, he said that this is very bad. And this man said, but they're spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world. They're everywhere. Said, if Lord Chaitanya wanted to do it, he would have done it himself. I said, tell this to Prabhupada. So we're walking on the morning walk, and I was talking with him, and probably
you can elaborate on that a little more. Like, when he said that they are spreading Mahaprabhu's message all over the world, but he kind of didn't accept it.
The Swami?
Yes.
Jyoti Maharaj? Yes. Yeah, he didn't accept that it was being done.
I think it's pure reaction.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of that going on. We had to deal with a lot of other institutions that were... They were envious of Srila Prabhupada and didn't make his or help him in any way to spread Krishna consciousness throughout America. They wouldn't send the cartels or Nibandha or anything in any cases. There was probably still a lot of caste consciousness and Brahminical consciousness of who is capable of accepting this message of Vaishnavism. Prabhupada didn't think like that at all, but they did. Most of the other in the Gaudiya Math did. They were not cooperative at all. So this man actually was very supportive of us, and he liked Prabhupada very much. So he was having an argument in front of the whole congregation at the Gaudiya Math there in Janmasthami about ISKCON and what they were doing. So when he came back, I told him when we were on that walk, I said, bring that up to Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada happened to be walking and talking at the same time, and he turned around to me and he said, why are you talking while I'm talking? Well, we get the mercy from Srila Prabhupada in different ways, and that was one way also. And I immediately dove into the neighborhood dirt very quickly and then kind of looked up at Srila Prabhupada, and he looked down and he says, that is all right. So I think my reaction was proper at that time because it was really, yes. And I just wanted him to bring that up to Prabhupada, and I don't know why, what was driving me to do that, but he did. And he said, Swamiji, and he explained what happened, and Prabhupada stopped. He turned around to all of us and he said, in regards to why Lord Chaitanya didn't do it himself, as the Gaudiya Math tried to say, Prabhupada turned around, and with such conviction and purity, Prabhupada said, he left it for me. Actually, when I was in Vrindavan, there's some devotees information of Prabhupada's lectures, and he actually gave me that where I was talking to Srila Prabhupada at that time, so we could actually keep it on record. So there's so many experiences we had with Srila Prabhupada. Some of us, you know, viewed it in one way and in other ways, but there's no doubt that we, to this day, probably don't truly know who Srila Prabhupada was and is. But it was a special, special advent to give that mercy out freely, without any discrimination, to everyone. And, who's it?
I was going to say Srila Prabhupada right here.
So, there's so many memories and so many nice tapes and videos and that we can access and see the...
Yeah, that's his station, I think it is.
Hari Bol. Where's his mom?
Hari Bol, here's more from you. Now we request Srila Prabhupada to
I just want to follow a little bit of the mood that Srila Prabhupada has set. In terms of how devotees, especially devotees such as myself, were feeling in terms of interacting with Srila Prabhupada, that arm reverence that he was talking about, standing back a little bit, I think Prabhupada said, fools rush in where angels dare to tread. So that was definitely a fact, and in terms of association I had with Srila Prabhupada. And I want to give you a couple of examples of what I consider to be missed opportunities And you be the judge what you would do in these situations, because I think if I had to be the judge what I do now, back then, I would have done it differently. But let me tell you, there's two instances. One was the first time I went to Sridhar Mayapur. I was a brahmachari on the Bibichi Library Party. We were traveling, and Satsuruga Maharaj was the head of our traveling party. He was also a GBC member, so he had to go to India early for the festival because they had the GBC meetings before the festival. And so he needed a brahmachari servant to go with him, so I got the chance to go with him. So we went to India early before all of the devotees went that year. And so when we got to Mayapur, there are very few devotees in Mayapur. Devotees served there. Not even the devotees from India came there in great numbers at that point in time, because it was before the festival time. This is in 76. Now, Prabhupada had a schedule where every day in the afternoon around 4 o'clock he had a darshan in his room. Now just try to picture the situation. There are not many devotees around. Mayapur in those days also wasn't as bustling as it is now. And Prabhupada was having a darshan in his room about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. One devotee that went with me, he was serving Tamal Krishnamurti, at that time his name is Jiva Goswami. Every day he would go down and go to Prabhupada's darshan. But somehow or another I was feeling like, well, I shouldn't go. I don't want to intrude. I don't want to go in there. So I never went. So many devotees have wonderful things to say about those darshans of Srila Prabhupada and Mayapur. He was so relaxed. He would sit under big cushions and put his leg up, and there are pictures where he, has his legs showing and just completely relaxed, He loved the Mayapur like that, and that's what those darshans were like. But I was just a few feet away in my room, but I never went. And so I think, now I think back now, I think I was a fool why I didn't go to take advantage of having such association with Srila Prabhupada. I think I might have taken that car ride and I thought I'd ask me 3 times. But at the time, I can understand your feelings to not go. So I think that's one missed opportunity. And again, you think what you would do. I mean, we're hearing such wonderful glories of Srila Prabhupada, not only the personal association that devotees like Srila Prabhupada Maharaj had with him, and so many other senior devotees in our movement, but also the glorious of who he is in terms of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission that Bhakti Sri Maharaj was speaking earlier today. Knowing that, what would you do? Would you have gone to those darshans? I think that certainly I would have acted differently if I had to do it over again. There was one other instance, similar instance like that. Srila Prabhupada was traveling in the West, and he went to Toronto. And our traveling party went there to Toronto to be with him. And he gave a Sunday feast lecture there. And during the Sunday feast lecture, as Prabhupada often did, was it during the lecture or was it during group puja? Maybe it was during group puja. But Prabhupada had a habit where everyone would offer flowers when they came to worship him in the morning for Guru Puja, and then during the kirtan he would take the flowers and throw them out like that at the kirtan. People would go wild, the boys would go wild, probably throw the flowers out like that. So Prabhupada was doing that, and while he was doing that, I was there dancing, and I backed up and something hit my foot. And I looked down and I picked it up and it was a ring. It was a ring, and it had the Hare, it was a gold ring, and it had the Hare Krishna mantra written engraved around it, wow, that's interesting. I thought, this must belong to Subal Vilas. That he was like a grihastha there, and I thought, well, it must be his ring. So I thought, I'll give it to him after the program. So we're sitting here during the class and everything, and I had the ring, and I was playing it. I put it on my hand. Finally, after the class, Prabhupada did another thing which he often did in temples after the class. Was he would give out cookies while the devotees had kirtan, and everyone would come up and get prasadam. He would hand out cookies to everybody. So during that time, I got the fortune to be able to fan Prabhupada. So I was fanning him, and I had a ring in my pocket. And so he was giving out cookies, and I was one of the first ones that I was fanning him, so I got a cookie. And so I was fanning him, and after everyone was there, Prabhupada had more cookies. And he was looking around, you know. Who wanted to give the mercy to somebody? He was like looking around, who's going to come? You know, he had this cookie in his hand. And he turned to me, and he went like that with the cookie in his hand. And I said, I didn't say anything. I showed him, well, I already have one, sure. I don't want more of your mercy. I already have your mercy in my hand. You don't have to give me any more. That was a missed opportunity. Why wouldn't I say, okay, I'll take it more. All you have to give to a fellow, I'll take it. But no, I have some of it. I'm not sure I have some. So he turned and gave it to somebody else. So I think that was a missed opportunity. But there was a double missed opportunity there too, because after Prabhupada got up and he left, and Pushya Krishna Maharaj was looking around for the Vyasa Sanya, and I knew what he was looking for. He was looking for that ring, you know, and, I would have thought, this might be Prabhupada's ring. This is Prabhupada's ring. I could have given it to him right there on the Vyasa sign. I was standing right next to him. But I had it in my pocket, and I was thinking, this belongs to Prabhupada. And then as soon as Pushya Krishna Maharaj was looking around, I knew he was looking for Prabhupada. I said, I have it. Here it is. And he took it, and he got to give it to Prabhupada. So, a few missed opportunities that I think if I had an opportunity to do again in time, I certainly would have done it differently. I would have gone to those darshans, I would have taken that cookie, and I would have given Srila Prabhupada his ring. And then,
I'll tell a story, and show them to give a little history. My history was I was a little older than most devotees. I'd been in the Navy. I came to Krishna consciousness, and I thought, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to just throw myself into it. So I wasn't shy at all. I was not shy with Prabhupada at all. And whenever there was a chance, I would just push myself in and get, you know, go right up close. But it had to, also the flip side of that was that sometimes he just blew me away. Like I remember one time I was coming to see him or something, and he just put his hand, he said, just get out, you know, get away from him. He didn't say a word, just put his hand. Another time I remember in London, he probably some flowers on his desk, and I came in paying my vacancies, and I just kind of reached over and smelled the flowers, and probably looked at me like, who is this aborigine coming up to me? I could see that he just wasn't used to anybody so aggressive as me. Another time I remember in Japan, when Prabhupada was leaving the first time, his feet were up like this a little bit, and I just very quickly went and rubbed my hand on his feet, and he was like shocked because I did it so fast. I got his whole foot, you know. So I was like, I'm probably looking at that. So there were times I got, you know, good mercy. I certainly would have run in the car. But there was some times also that, you know, he just pushed me away. So I didn't mind so much, you know, I knew it wasn't anything bad. If I had to do it over again, I think I probably would have done the same thing. I would have just at least I'm not sitting here 30 years later, lamenting, oh, my God. One time I was in Sajid Srila Prabhupada in London, and the system was we used sandalwood oil on Prabhupada's head, and so I massaged his head, and at the end we did the feet, although that was opposite of normal, but that was the way the system was. So Prabhupada was kind of like resting, I had one foot up and the other foot, and I suddenly took both of his feet and put them on my chest. And Prabhupada looked at me like, he looked at me straight in the eyes, and at first I was looking at him straight in the eyes. And it wasn't funny, it was, you know, it was like that. And the first thing I saw in his eyes was that he was bashful, that he was shy, that I was showing this kind of deference to him, and he didn't feel, you know, his first reaction was that he wasn't worthy. He was so humble. But then I could see, I was looking at his eyes, and I saw his eyes change, and then he was like, out of duty, he accepted it. You know, that he's my spiritual master. And then he was looking at me, and then I was looking at him. But his eyes got so bright and so that I had to look down. So now that's one lamentation I have. If I had to do over again, I would just keep looking at him. But I couldn't do it because he was so sure and so bright, and I was. So now we're going to hear something from really intimate from Bhakti Shumara.
Well, I'm not sure you're thinking of speaking tonight. I thought I was just here. Well, I was just considering that I was neither shy nor rushing into it. It just happened, and I must admit that whatever happened was simply due to the mercy of the other senior devotees who just kind of took me to Srila Prabhupada. I didn't really think that I can have such close association with Srila Prabhupada. I mean, when I joined, Prabhupada had thousands of disciples. Devotees were just dying to have a moment association with Srila Prabhupada. And they all were so senior, so advanced, with so many accomplishments. And I was just happened to join towards the end of Srila Prabhupada's presence on this planet. Like, I mean, Shavananda Prabhu knows, I'm just an ordinary bhakta.
Never ordinary.
But then it just happened, like, since the time I joined, I've been dying to have the darshan of Srila Prabhupada. When I joined, Prabhupada was in America, I joined in Mayapur, and I was waiting when Prabhupada would come back, I would get to see him. And then I got the news that Prabhupada came back to India, Prabhupada was in Bombay. So I told Bhavananda Prabhu, he was a sannyasi at that time, and he was the in charge of Mayapur, Jayapur Maharaj, he was one of the co-directors. So when I told him that I wanted to go to Bombay to meet Srila Prabhupada, so he discouraged me. He said that, look, in Bombay nobody knows you, so you won't get any access to Srila Prabhupada. And besides that, Prabhupada is quite sick, so he's not seeing anybody. Rather than wait for Prabhupada to come here and then meet him.
So I accepted that, and then I got the news that Prabhupada was going to Kumbh Mela in Allahabad. And so it was decided that a group of devotees would drive to Kumbh Mela by bus. We rented a bus and we started. We arrived in Allahabad, Kumbh Mela, at around noon time. And I just got out of the bus and I just asked the devotees where is Prabhupada. And I just ran. I just wanted to go and see Srila Prabhupada. And I was told that Radha Prabhupada was staying in. And, but there was a devotee guarding the gate, and guarding the entrance rather. There was a wall made out of corrugated tin sheets, and there was an entrance. So when I wanted to go in, he stopped me and he said, no, you can't go in like this. Just wait till evening, Prabhupada will give darshan, then you can come. So I just, I went to pick my luggage, went to the room, and the room was a tent. And then I was just walking around there. And again, Bhavananda was carrying a basket of vegetables that he brought for Srila to offer to Srila Prabhupada. He just had the basket on his shoulder holding it, and he was going to Prabhupada's room, Prabhupada's tent, and he asked me, he said, he saw me, he said, come, let's go to Srila Prabhupada. So I just ran into, I walked behind him. He was practically running, so I also ran behind him. And we went past the guard, because he was a big devotee, which I'm not saying, and he didn't stop him. And so while he walked straight into Prabhupada's tent, I just saw Srila Prabhupada from outside, the Prabhupada was sitting there, and I offered obeisances to Srila Prabhupada, and that was a mistake. So when I, after offering obeisances, when I tried to go in, I think it was Rameshwar Maharaj at that time. He was there, he was Prabhupada's secretary at that time, and he told me, no, you can't go in. Prabhupada was taking lunch. Another disappointment, so I just walked away. And then I didn't try to get near Srila Prabhupada. I thought, you know, I just see Srila Prabhupada and hear Srila Prabhupada from a distance. In the evening I would hear Srila Prabhupada speak, give darshan. Many, many people used to come to Kumbh Mela. There's thousands of millions of people actually go there at that time. And that was a Purna Kumbh that year. So it was very crowded. Many, many people used to come to see Srila Prabhupada in the evening. The tent used to be packed. And I used to just sit in one corner and listen to Srila Prabhupada. But then one day Srila Prabhupada decided to leave. One morning, the news got around that Srila Prabhupada decided to leave Kumbh Mela and go to Calcutta. And I just pretended, okay, Prabhupada is going to leave. And then Bhavananda came and told me the Prabhupada was leaving in the, by train this evening. And you are also coming. And that was a very exciting news for me, because there are hundreds of devotees in Kumbh Mela to get the opportunity to travel with Srila Prabhupada. I was really excited that I had this good fortune to travel with Srila Prabhupada. And so I remember the train started. Hundreds of devotees were standing on the platform to see Srila Prabhupada off. And I was proudly standing on the entrance of the train, and the train started to move. And I, the fortunate one, traveling with Srila Prabhupada. Then that night, we took rest soon after the train started to move. The next morning, I was chanting. sitting in my compartment, and Bhavananda came to me and said, come, I'll take you to Shri Prabhupada. And I, all this while I was dying to meet Shri Prabhupada, but when the time came to, when he came and said that, come, I'll take you to Shri Prabhupada, I had a feeling that, well, I can't go near Shri Prabhupada. Like I had a very, very strong feeling that I'm not qualified to go anywhere near Shri Prabhupada. So when Shri Prabhupada was speaking like that, or Shravananda Prabhupada was speaking like that, I could understand the feeling. That when you are in presence of Shri Prabhupada, near Shri Prabhupada, you have to feel, I'm not qualified to go near Shri Prabhupada. Bhavananda could understand that. So he just grabbed me by my hand, and he dragged me to the corridor, and opened the great door of Shri Prabhupada's compartment and pushed me in. And I just fell flat, offering obeisances. And then when I got up, I saw that Shri Prabhupada was looking at me. And then Prabhupada said, come, sit down. Prabhupada was asking me to sit next to him. The first class compartment of the Indian trains, those they had two rows of seats facing each other. In the other seats there were Jayapataka Maharaj, Bhavananda, and I think it was Rameshwar. And Abhidham Prabhu, who was the temple president of Calcutta at the time, he was sitting on the floor. And Prabhupada was sitting, and Prabhupada was asked me to sit down next to him. So I said, Prabhupada, I would rather sit on the floor. Prabhupada said, no, you switch here. So when Prabhupada reached this hill, I just rolled up the blanket that was sprayed over that seat, and I sat in one corner. And Prabhupada, after some initial exchanges, he just told me, you translate my books into Bengali. I was very fortunate to have that instruction, that service, from directly from Shri Prabhupada. He wanted me to translate his books into Bengali. And that actually gave me the opportunity to be close to Srila Prabhupada. Because practically every day I would go to Srila Prabhupada and read out what I translated. And then when I started to translate the books, the first book I started to translate was Bhagavad Gita. And also here again, Shravananda Prabhu was the BBT manager at that time in the East Indian BBT. And that also brought us very close together. I used to translate and he used to print. The Bhagavad Gita was the one that we printed first. Shravananda Prabhu printed. East Indian BBT. And then I used to go to Srila Prabhupada and read out what I translated, and Prabhupada would correct them. Sometimes Prabhupada would appreciate my translation. And then one day Prabhupada gave me a stack of letters, and he said he wanted me to answer them, a stack of Bengali letters. And I used to read out the letters, and Prabhupada used to give me the points. I used to take note of the points, and then I had to formulate the letter and handwrite the letter, and Prabhupada used to sign from his letter hand. And when I completed the Bengali letters, Prabhupada gave me a stack of Hindi letters, and he wanted me to reply them. And then one day Prabhupada told me, from now on, you'll become my secretary for Indian affairs. And he called Kamal Krishna Maharaj, and he told him that he's appointing me as the secretary for Indian affairs. And he asked Kamal Krishna Maharaj that I should move in to the room where he was staying next to Shri Prabhupada.
Where was this?
And so that also gave me not only the opportunity to serve Srila Prabhupada and be with Srila Prabhupada. From then onwards, I was with Srila Prabhupada all the time. And then when Prabhupada was about to leave Mayapur and going to Bombay, Prabhupada was going to Bombay. And
this is 77.
And Bhavananda, he told me that I shouldn't actually go to Bombay, that I should stay in Mayapur and serve, continue to serve, because I had quite a few responsible service in Mayapur by the time. And those days there were very few Indian devotees joining the movement. I was practically one of the few Indian devotees. And most of them were Western devotees, most of them were Westerners, from Native Americans. And then Prabhupada, when Bhavananda said that I should stay, continue to stay in Mayapur and not travel with Srila Prabhupada, although my heart was broken, but I couldn't just say anything, because first of all, I mean, he was an authority, and the way he practically took me to Srila Prabhupada by my hand and introduced me to Srila Prabhupada. He was the one who created that good fortune for me, and I naturally feel very indebted to him for that. And so then, I was feeling bad, but still I couldn't tell him anything. And then Prabhupada, just the day before Prabhupada was leaving, he asked me, "Aren't you coming?" And I said, "No, Srila Prabhupada, because Bhavananda Maharaj said that service in separation is better than service." Personally. Then he said, "Yes, that may be, but I think when your spiritual master tells you to come with me, you should follow it." So next thing I knew, I just ran and I told Bhavananda what Prabhupada told me. And Bhavananda said, "Okay, then you have to go." And I told him, so he just added myself. I said, "I'm going to say that you have to pay my share." And that actually created the good fortune of being with Srila Prabhupada. Although it was the very end, like after that was 1977, beginning of 1977, January, February. And Prabhupada left in November. And from that time onwards, till the end, I had the good fortune of being with Srila Prabhupada all the time. Excepting just a few days when Prabhupada went to England. Prabhupada's plan actually was to go to first to London, then to New York, then to Itanagari, then to Washington, then to LA, and then to go to Hawaii. So here again, like the Prabhupada was all set to leave, he was dressed up and waiting for the car to drive to Vrindavan, to drive to Delhi Airport from Vrindavan. And I was sitting at Prabhupada's feet. And Prabhupada asked, "Aren't you coming?" And I said, "No, Prabhupada, I didn't have my passport with me." And so Prabhupada said, "Can you come and join me in Hawaii?" But Prabhupada had to come back to India, go back to India from London. And I went back to Mayapur. And then one afternoon I got a telegram. It was from Tamalakrishna Maharaj, said that Prabhupada wants you to come immediately to India. So next day I took a flight to enter the Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So now you request Shravananda for you to see.
Well, I do remember this, just to follow up on Bhakti Charu's Maharaj's being with Prabhupada. You could see, everyone could see, especially in the last days in Vrindavan,
that Bhakti Sri Maharaj had a special intimate relationship with Srila Prabhupada, that he was always, you know, close to him and talking, and Prabhupada did just confiding in him and felt very happy to have him. Because like Bhakti Sri Maharaj was saying, there weren't many very good Indian devotees joining. So when somebody is so qualified and intelligent and scholarly and devoted, surrendered to him, the Prabhupada was very enlightened by that, and we're all happy to see that Prabhupada's wish was coming true, that there were some good Indian boys coming. And I that's one thing that we feel now, especially, that Prabhupada would be so pleased with so many qualified Indian boys are turning, and Prabhupada would be very happy about that.
I want to add something to that about qualified Indians joining. It's very true, Prabhupada used to, once Prabhupada was telling me, go to the meeting, that everyone is coming, for the Indian one is coming. And naturally, Prabhupada would be very happy to see that so many Indians are joining. But also at the same time, I can tell you, Prabhupada will also ask you, or ask us, where are the Americans? Where are the Europeans? We are in America, but where are the Americans? Like when Prabhupada went to Africa, in Nairobi, the devotees arranged that important Indians would come and meet with Srila Prabhupada. So in the evening they came and met with Srila Prabhupada, and after the mess, Prabhupada asked, did I come to Africa to meet the Indians? Where are the Africans? And then the next day the devotees went out and got the African devotees to come and Africans to come and meet Srila Prabhupada. So that is one very, very important consideration. And another thing I can tell you, that when you come, if you came during Prabhupada's time, you couldn't be a part-time devotee. Prabhupada would have demanded you to be a full-time devotee. That was the standard those days. Whoever came, he became a full-time devotee. Yes, you're joining the movement is very nice, but Prabhupada will demand your full commitment to this movement. In one of the first meetings with Prabhupada just directly told me that just offer this life to Krishna. Just offer this life to Krishna and see what happens. And Prabhupada went on for more than half an hour talking to me about the importance of offering ourselves to Krishna. So Prabhupada would want a full-time commitment, not a part-time commitment. I tell you, those days, I mean, I'm just being very frank, because it's a serious business, and I think, you know, you have to take it from me. Those days, everyone's business was to remain a brahmachari and become a sannyasi. That was their ambition. Everybody's ambition those days was to become full-time committed devotee. And very few devotees were actually married. I remember once somebody cursed me that I would get married. So you can well imagine what getting married actually meant to us those days. It was a curse. Told me actually, I cursed you that you get married. Of course, and I was just stationed. Of course, I was not a sannyasi at that time. I was a brahmachari. Yeah. Man, it was a heavy personality. Anyway, and I was devastated. I went and told Srila Prabhupada, somebody cursed me that I'll get married. Prabhupada said, you've already been married.